him just to check out what he was wearing. Mark never paid any attention to how he dressed. I wouldn't be surprised if someday he completely forgot he was supposed to have something on and walked out into the street naked. But somehow, he was always dressed right for the occasion. He had on a gold sweatshirt and wheat-colored jeans and tennis shoes. "What are you wearing?" Mark asked. His voice sounded funny. I shrugged. "I don't know yet." Mark turned to leave. "I gotta go now. I'm supposed to meet Terry over at his house. I left the keys in Charlie's car." As he was leaving, he called over his shoulder, "I found this shirt out in the street, and it's lying on the bed if you want to see it." I heard the door slam and the sound of his light running steps on the porch. I finished washing off my face and went into our room. Mark and I shared a bedroom, which was pretty small. We have a small house, and it seemed even smaller with our twin beds. One was against each wall, and that left only a path about 3 feet wide to the closet. I wanted to get a look at this shirt Mark had found out in the street. It was real funny. That shirt happened to be just my size and dark blue, which happens to be a good color for me. For a minute, I wondered whether he had bought it or stolen it. They were the same thing to Mark, but I decided to forget about it. After all, it's the thought that counts. Mark's clothes were almost all things I had outgrown. I grinned as I buttoned up the shirt. If Mark really cared about clothes, he'd steal some, but he didn't. But he knew me well enough to know what I would be thinking about. If you have two friends in your lifetime, you're lucky. If you have one good friend, you're more than lucky. Mark didn't understand, and Kathy did. I started spending more and more time with Kathy. Since I had the car, we went for a lot of drives and got a lot of cokes together. We were always talking to each other about the way we felt. I tried telling her how I felt about Charlie, about how shook the whole thing had me. She told me about herself, about how she wanted to go to college more than anything, about how she worried about Eminem, and about life in a big family, something I wasn't familiar with. She was so smart, yet she didn't know a lot of things. She was one of the few really innocent chicks I had ever run into. But I could talk to her about anything, talk to her better than I could anyone, even Mark. After a few weeks, we'd drive by the park and make out for a little while. It was different for me, though, because I had quit thinking only about myself, quit pushing for all I could get. Mark was acting strange these days, too. He would stare at me for long periods of time when he thought I wasn't watching, like he was trying to find the old Brian in this stranger, like he was trying to figure out who I was. One night, he even almost lost his temper with me when I told him I was going goofing around with Kathy instead of with him. It was as if he felt something slipping and he was trying to hang on. I couldn't help him. I was trying to hang on myself. He even acted like he was jealous of Kathy. In all the years I'd known him, in all the years I'd gone with different girls, he had never acted like that. I was changing, and he wasn't. Chapter 6. The Texans were finally caught and tried. I had to go to the trial to testify. Mark did too. He watched me closely at first. I guess he couldn't forget that by the time the police had showed up at Charlie's, I had been hysterical. He didn't have to worry. I went through the whole trial calm, collected, numb, and empty. I felt like a tape recorder playing back something it had impersonally recorded. The Texans were sentenced to life after a trial that didn't last as long as I thought it would, I guess because there wasn't any defense. I didn't feel glad or vengeful or anything. I really hadn't cared much whether or not they even caught those guys. Charlie was dead. Nothing was going to change that. I tried to figure out what made me so shook up about it. I knew people died, although I still can't see me doing it. My father had died, so I knew that people close to you died the same as strangers did. I guess I just couldn't see standing there, alive, talking, thinking, breathing, being, 1 second, and dead the next. It really bothered me. Death by violence isn't the same as dying any other way, accident or disease or old age. It just ain't the same. That winter, Mark and me were kind of celebrities because of our involvement in the trial. We were invited to sosh parties, and we were stared at in the halls, and even the teachers treated us differently. I just put up with it. Mark kind of enjoyed it. He felt bad about Charlie being dead, though. Enough to shut up people who tried to get him to talk about it. Mark and me used to go down to the bar and just sit on the curb across the street and stare at the boarded-up windows. Just sit and stare and not say anything. It's funny how you don't think about people until after they're dead. Or gone. Mom had to stay in bed for a month, so we were really getting hard up for money. I got to thinking about what Charlie had said when I asked him for a job. I decided I needed a haircut, clean clothes, and a really big change in attitude. I've told you that I don't like authority. This gives people the impression that I'm a smart-aleck kid. I'll admit I'm pretty mouthy. I got to thinking, who's gonna hire a mouthy kid who acts like he already knows it all? Even if you do know it all, Mark said one evening while we were sitting on the porch, you don't have to let them know it. Very good idea, I grinned at him. We were getting along better lately. He had given up trying to keep us together the same as we used to be. I know now this must have been a struggle. Branching off from Mark couldn't affect me so much. I was all wrapped up in Kathy. He was on his own. I didn't know how he spent his time when I was with Kathy, and I didn't bother to find out. When you go so far as to get a haircut and iron a shirt, I know you're serious. We're really hard up, ain't we, Brian? Yep. Or hasn't the shortage of food bugged you at all? I don't eat like some people. I'm gonna start bringing in some money. You wait and see, buddy. I ain't gonna sponge forever. This was the first time in all the years he had lived with us that Mark ever said anything about being dependent on us. I looked at him quickly, and I wanted to say, what do you mean, sponge? We love you, and we want you here, and Mark, you're my brother, and you've got a right to whatever I've got. I didn't. I said, don't be a dingling. Now I wish I had told him how much he meant to us, to me and Mom, how he made us seem more like a family. But I never have been able to say things like that, to tell people I loved them, unless it was some nitwit chick I couldn't care less about. So I just gave him a punch on the shoulder. He grinned at me, but absently, like he was thinking of something else. That night, Kathy and I went for a drive. I wanted to tell her about my new approach to getting a job, but before I could, she said suddenly, I think Eminem is smoking marijuana. She sounded worried. I was puzzled. So what? She gave me an incredulous look. So what? Have you smoked it? Yeah, I said. You haven't?
No.
It ain't much. I'd rather have beer any day. I think a lot of these kids just dig it because it's in, it's against the law, and it's supposed to be cool. Me, I think it's okay, but it sure ain't worth 5 years in a state prison.
You won't smoke it anymore. It was a request, not an order. So I answered, I said I wasn't nuts about it.
Kathy still seemed concerned.
Did you like it? Did it make you want to try stronger stuff?
Like acid? Nope, I can't say that it did. But maybe it affects some people like that.
At least, that's what I read in the magazines. Kathy sat back with a sigh.
But it's different with you, Brian. You're smart enough to enjoy yourself without artificial stimulants.
I didn't say anything to this, as I never turned down compliments. She continued,
But Eminem, he's so trusting. If he's running around with people who give him grass, he'll take it. If someone handed him LSD and said, This is groovy, he'd say okay and take it. I worry because before Eminem always seemed so happy at home. He never seemed to need anything else. But lately, he's gotten so much grief for his hair and some of his ideas. I wish Daddy would leave him alone. Eminem isn't happy at home now, so he goes other places. I don't know where. I don't even know his friends anymore.
You love him a lot, don't you? I said, vaguely jealous, feeling a mild form of whatever it was that Mark felt about Kathy.
Sure. Don't you? Kathy said, amazed at the possibility that someone might not love simple, brilliant, trusting Eminem.
Yeah, I said, because at that moment I loved anything that Kathy loved, because I loved her. I did. I thought it was corny. Love is always corny to anyone not experiencing it himself, and even now, to me, it was corny. But I couldn't help it. I thought about all the times I had said, I love you, to girls I didn't love, to some I didn't even like, and it had been so easy. And now I couldn't even look at her for fear she could tell somehow. It was really weird.
I think you'd be a good influence on him, Kathy was saying, and I realized I hadn't heard a thing she'd been saying. I know what, she continued. Let's pick up him and Mark and go get a Coke over on the ribbon.
Okay, I said. The last thing I wanted just then was to be alone with her. I could easily say something really dumb. We picked up Mark pretty quick. He was walking home from Terry Jones's house. We had to hunt and hunt for Eminem, but we finally found him in the bowling alley. The ribbon was a 2-mile stretch of hot dog and hamburger stands, drive-ins and supermarkets over on the west side, close to where the Sochas lived. At night, the parking lots were filled with kids sitting on their cars and waving, watching, and yelling at other kids driving by. You could drive up and down the street looking at people, or park your car and look at people. The cops sometimes came along and told everyone to get back into their cars, but the cops were mostly guys who had been patrolling the ribbon for a long time. The kids had worn them down by being pleasantly smart-aleck and smilingly uncooperative, so unless the kids were openly smoking grass or fighting, the cops were content to sit on the cars with them and yell rude things to the chicks driving by. It was a great place to go to pick up chicks. If you followed a carload of them around for a while, they might pull over and exchange phone numbers with you. Everyone in town went there to see who was going with who and who had what car. If you found someone you wanted to drive around with, you parked your car and left it while you goofed around with maybe a dozen different people in one night. Just the driving up and down was a blast. There had been all kinds of editorials in the paper about it, because a lot of pushers took advantage of the filled parking lots, and quite a bit of grass and money exchanged hands there, but mostly it was harmless. Fights down on the ribbon had really died off in the last year. It had gotten pretty safe, except for drag racing, which caused a wreck or two a week.
Boy, I hope I see someone I know, Kathy said. Here I sit, surrounded by beautiful boys.
She gave me a teasing grin. Mark raised his eyebrows.
Well, if you feel that way about it.
He put his arm across her shoulders. We were sitting pretty close together because all four of us were in the front seat. Kathy was next to me, Mark on her other side, and Eminem was hanging out the window, gravely watching people, waving if he was waved to, yelling back if he was yelled at, and always slightly surprised at the crudity of some of the calls, as if he hadn't heard the same things 100,000 times before. I put one arm across Kathy's shoulders, too. She beamed. It's so nice to feel wanted.
A couple of blondes in an orange Camaro came by on Eminem's side of the car and made him an indecent proposition. I thought that kid was going to fall out the window, he was so shocked. The rest of us laughed. The Ribbon was a 2-lane street with an extra lane at the traffic lights for left turns. When we stopped at the light, we were in the middle lane, with cars on both sides of us. The blonde chicks in the orange Camaro were on our right, and they were still talking to Eminem. I didn't catch much of the conversation, but Mark did, and he was talking to them, too, trying to see around Eminem, who took up a lot of the window. On our left was a green out-of-sight Corvette with a couple of guys in it, waiting for a left turn signal. They looked like real snobs. You can tell just by looking that some guys are snobs, especially ones with Corvettes. The one on the passenger side glanced over at us and, I still don't understand why, popped off with a really obscene remark. I sat stunned for a minute. The thought of Kathy's hearing such a thing just froze me. Then so quick I didn't even realize what was happening, Mark reached past Eminem, opened the door, pushed Eminem out of the way, ran around to my side of the car, and punched the foul-mouthed guy in the nose, literally smashing his nose in. It was their turn to be stunned. Before they could move, Mark was back in the car. He jumped into the back seat and yelled, "Take off!" The light had turned green, so I stepped hard on the accelerator. The Corvette was supposed to turn left, and all the cars behind it were honking, so they turned left. I thought maybe they'd come after us. They were older guys, maybe 18 years old, but they didn't. We drove up and down the Ribbon without seeing them again. "You're a fast worker," Kathy said. I wondered if she was mad at me because I hadn't been the one to punch that guy. She was my girlfriend. I should have done it. I was halfway hacked off at Mark for showing me up. "Well," Mark said in a mock serious voice hanging over the front seat, "I get these impulses."
"Impulses to jump out of cars and hit people?" Kathy said dryly, and I realized she didn't think Mark was a hero for what he'd done.
As a matter of fact, she didn't think too much of it.
"They hit us first," Mark said, sitting back in the seat. "A hit don't have to be physical. I couldn't hit them the way they hit us without hitting you, too." I had always known that, in spite of his lousy grades, Mark was every bit as smart as I was. But it was still surprising whenever he proved it to me. Kathy was quiet. Then she turned around and looked at Mark for a long time.
"I never know what to make of you, Mark."
"Why make anything of anybody? Why not just take people or leave them?"
Mark was in a funny mood. I could tell. I had seen him in that mood before. He was never that way with me, but I'd seen him suddenly turn on people, like a teased lion who's had enough. I remember the night Charlie was killed, Mark grabbing up the shotgun and firing away. I don't think I could have done that, even if I'd known Charlie was dead at the time.
"I don't like being analyzed, baby," Mark said, "so don't."
I couldn't tell him to lay off, because he had a point. Kathy did like to turn everyone inside out and look at him. It didn't bother me, but I could see where it might bug some people.
"I'm sorry," Kathy said, even though she wasn't.
I had to say something, so I said, "Let's get a hamburger." We turned into a big drive-in called Jay's, which was always crowded. It was set up with a stall for each car, and a little deal that had a menu and a button on it. You pushed the button and a voice came out of the deal and said, "Order, please," and you told the speaker what you wanted. In this case, it was 3 hamburgers, 1 steak sandwich, a cherry pineapple 7-Up, and 3 Cokes. And about 10 minutes later, a chick appeared with the food. It was slightly spooky. The place was crawling with kids. It was mainly a sosh hangout. There used to be a drive-in over on our side of town where the Hoods went, but the Dingo was bombed and had burned down, so we started coming over here. Kids were driving through the parking area looking at the kids who were sitting in their cars. It was the same thing that was going on in the street,
only on a smaller scale. They had a cop stationed at the drive-in to prevent trouble. He was on a first-name basis with a lot of the kids there. He was a friendly, good-natured cop who didn't mind getting splattered by a water pistol now and then. I didn't care much for him, though, due to my feelings about cops in general. I began telling Kathy about the time the cops had beaten me up when I was 13. "You shouldn't have been running around drunk in the middle of the night," she said. "I never thought of it that way," I said.
"Who would?" came Mark's voice from the back seat. I realized right then that whatever chance Mark and Kathy had ever had of becoming friends was gone. I had already sensed in Kathy the same hostility toward Mark that he had for her. That put me in a really great position.
"Hey, there's Terry Jones. I'm going over to see him," Mark said suddenly.
He gave the cop a quick glance. You weren't supposed to get out of your car at the drive-in. They came up with this rule about a year ago, because all this switching from car to car was causing fights, and what was worse, cars were left empty in the stalls for hours at a time while the owners were running the ribbon in someone else's car. This doesn't make money for the drive-ins.
"Mark doesn't like me much, does he?" Kathy said.
Eminem looked at her, astonished. For the first time, I was sick of her honesty. "You don't like him either," I said. Not used to having her honesty turned back on her, Kathy was silent for a minute.
"I guess we're fighting over you. Isn't that funny?"
"A real riot," I said dryly. I looked across the street, watching some little 12 and 13-year-old teeny boppers make fools of themselves, smoking, trying to act cool, pushing each other, screaming and swearing so loud I could hear them. I had a sudden recollection of Mark and me at 12, smoking our heads off, clowning around, hoping someone, usually some little long-haired chick, would notice us and see how cool we were. All of a sudden, it seemed like I was 100 years old, or 30 at least. I wondered if, when I got to be 20, I would think how stupid I was at 16. When I remembered us, it didn't seem possible that we had looked as silly as these teeny boppers. But I guess we had. At least then we weren't worried about looking silly. We were sure of ourselves, so sure we were the coolest things to hit town. Now I wasn't so sure. That was strange, too. In the past, I thought in terms of we. Now I was thinking in terms of me. "There sure isn't anything to do in this town," Kathy said, breaking in on my thoughts of the good old days. "We could go to a movie," I said, even though I didn't have the money to go to the movies, or money to go bowling, or money to go out to dinner, or money to ride go-karts, or go to the amusement park.
"No, I don't want to go to the movies. There's nothing to do in this town except drive up and down."
"That takes gas," Eminem said, "and gas takes money," even though neither Kathy or me had mentioned money. "Well, let's go drive up and down some more," I said, flipping a switch on the magic dealie that signals a car hop to appear and pick up our tray. I was thinking about what Kathy said. There was nothing to do except drive up and down the ribbon, even though we lived in a fairly large city. It wasn't New York, but for our part of the country it was a good size. All the adults in town screamed about the kids driving up and down, but what did they expect us to do? Sit and twiddle our thumbs like they probably did when they were young? No thanks. We drove up and down the ribbon again. It was getting hard to find a place to turn around. Usually the shopping center at the far end was good for a quick turnaround, but somehow the cops figured out that that was against some law that had been gathering dust for years, so they sat in the shopping center lots giving out tickets. If a kid got a ticket, he immediately went around collecting money from friends and strangers. Usually, he got at least a nickel or a dime from each person. I've never known anybody who took advantage of this custom by collecting money when he didn't really have a ticket. This would have been like squealing on someone you saw cheating, or refusing to lend or give or sell your senior theme to some promising junior. A block beyond the shopping center, under the bypass, the ribbon ended as suddenly as it began at a movie theater 2 miles back. Abrupt and unexplainable. There was another shopping center beyond the bypass, but for some reason it wasn't considered part of the ribbon, so it wasn't full of cops. We turned around there to head back, which is against the unwritten rules of the ribbon, but I didn't feel like messing around, sitting in the left turn lane for half an hour waiting to turn.
"Drive by the hot dog stand," M&M said,
so I pulled in to drive through the parking lot, which was filled with kids sitting on their cars. We got tied up in a long line of cars driving through the hot dog stand. M&M suddenly got out of the car.
"Where are you going?" Kathy asked.
"I got some friends around here," M&M said.
He should have. At least 3/4 of the guys out there had hair to their shoulders.
"Well, when can we pick you up?"
"Not ever. I'm not going home," M&M said, and walked off toward a group of kids sitting on a station wagon.
There were cars honking behind me, so I had to drive on. Even though Kathy was yelling,
"Stop! We can't just let him walk off like this!"
"I'll drive back through," I said, trying to hush her up, because I don't like hysterical chicks. She calmed down right away.
"That little mess, wait till I get a hold of him."
She didn't, though. When we came back through, he was gone, and nobody seemed to know where. I parked the car, and Kathy and me ran around asking different kids. We drove up and down the ribbon until 1 o'clock in the morning looking for him. I found Mark sitting on Terry's car. Terry had gone somewhere with a couple of girls. We picked him up and drove him home in silence. Kathy was crying without making any noise, and for the first time in my life, I wasn't annoyed with a girl for crying. Instead, I felt really bad. It was the first time I'd ever felt bad for anyone except Mark.
Chapter 7. I went with Kathy to break the news about M&M to her parents, and to explain why we were so late. Her father was sitting up waiting for us, and when I saw his face I was glad that I had a real good excuse, even though I was quite a bit bigger than him. Her mother got up and came into the front room in her house coat. She got real upset when we told her what had happened, but her father said, "He'll be home tomorrow. That kid's been going through this stage for months now."
"It's not just a stage," Kathy cried. "You can't say this is just a stage when it's important to people what they're feeling. Maybe he will outgrow it someday, but right now it's important. If he never comes home, it'll be your fault, always picking on him about silly, goofy things like his hair and flunking gym."
She sat down and began to cry again. Her father just looked at her and said, "Honey, I know it's because you're worried that you're talking like this. M&M will be home tomorrow. He's a sensible kid."
"Then why didn't you ever tell him so?" Kathy sobbed irrationally. "I don't think he's coming home tomorrow. He doesn't do things on the spur of the moment. He thinks things out. He's not going to come home."
By now, 2 or 3 younger kids had wandered in, dressed in their underwear or not dressed at all. They got enough out of the conversation to gather that M&M was gone, and they began crying too. It was a big mess, and I felt really uncomfortable. Mark was waiting out in the car, and as it was 2 in the morning and I had to go to school in a few hours, I wanted to leave. Only I just didn't want to leave Kathy. I wished I could take her home with me. Her father said, "Brian, thank you for your help. I think you'd better be going home. Your mother's probably worried." I could have told him that Mom never worried about Mark and me. She loved us, but let us run our own lives. But I only said, "Yes, sir." I suddenly noticed that where he wasn't bald, his hair was charcoal-colored too, and that his eyes, though smaller with age, were the same as Kathy's and M&M's. I wondered if it was strange, seeing your eyes in someone else's face. I was tired and thinking funny.
"Everyone uptight?" asked Mark when I got back into the car.
"Yep," I said. "I don't blame them. They don't have nothing to worry about, Mark said. Half the kids on the ribbon are living in someone else's car or house or garage. Shoot, I remember last summer, you and me sometimes didn't come home for weeks. We were bumming around the lake or somebody's house. Remember when Williamson rented that apartment for a couple of months with two other guys? I bet half the kids in town stopped there overnight. Yeah, but Eminem is just a kid. So are we. Nothing bad happens to you when you're a kid. Or haven't you realized that?
Youth is free from worry, I said sarcastically. You've been listening to too many adults.
I don't worry. I'm never scared of nothing, and I never will be, Mark said. As long as I'm a kid.
You can get away with anything, I said, because that phrase came through my head whenever I really thought about Mark.
Yeah, I can.
He was quiet.
You used to be able to.
I looked at him, and suddenly it was like seeing someone across a deep pit, someone you couldn't ever reach. It was like the car had widened into the Gulf of Mexico, and I was seeing Mark through a telescope. What's happening? I said, half out loud. But Mark was asleep. Eminem didn't come home the next day like his father thought he would. Kathy and I ran up and down the ribbon every night for a week, but it wasn't fun anymore because we were looking out for Eminem. We never did find him. We must have stopped 60 million little long-haired kids thinking they were Eminem, but none of them was. I began watching for him everywhere. I got a job in a supermarket, and I did a pretty good job of changing my attitude, outwardly at least. I couldn't help thinking smart-aleck things, but I could help saying them. Sacking groceries wasn't the most fun job in the world, but I was bringing in money. Mark was bringing in money, too, more than he ever had before. I couldn't imagine him stealing all of it, so I figured he must have gone in serious for poker. I never asked him where he got it, and Mom didn't either. Of course, she would never think Mark was getting it dishonestly. Besides, none of us was in any position to turn away extra money. One night, a couple of weeks after Eminem disappeared, Mark and me went goofing around by ourselves again. It was almost as if we had never felt a gulf between us, never been separated by something we couldn't see. We drove up and down the ribbon, trying to pick up chicks and get into drag races, even though our car wasn't all that fast. I was kind of half-hearted about picking up chicks, too, as I was more serious about Kathy than I let on, even to Kathy herself.
"Hey," Mark said suddenly, "look at who's over there in the parking lot."
It was Angela and a bunch of other chicks. Her type, by the way they dressed and the way they were acting. You can always tell when a girl wants to be picked up.
"Let's pull in," Mark said.
He was smiling. "Sure," I said, feeling with the old sense of thrill that something was up. Something was going to happen. We pulled into the parking lot, and immediately we were surrounded by girls. "Out of the way," I said superiorly. "I want to see Angela."
"Brian!" she yelled and jumped for me the minute I got out of the car. "Brian, I'm so glad to see you!"
She was pretty drunk. I let her hug me, though, catching Mark's wink. "Where you been keeping yourself, Angel?" I said. "How's married life?" She let go with a string of swear words which told me pretty well what she thought of married life, her in-laws, and her husband.
"I never cared about him anyway. I thought I was, but I wasn't, and that's the only reason I married him, the louse."
She was half crying now, between obscenities.
"You're the only boy I ever cared about, Brian."
"Sure," I said. I still hated the sight of her. She was as beautiful as ever, so striking that she could have been a movie star, but I remembered all the trouble she had caused, compared her to Kathy, and hated her. I let her hug me and bawl into my shirt front, because Mark was winking at me.
"Angel, let's go for a ride," Mark said. "You and Brian can talk over old times, and maybe I can get some more booze for you."
Sure,
Angela said, always eager for free booze. I couldn't believe she was that glad to see me. We drove around for a while, Angela telling us all of her problems. Her husband didn't have a job, her brothers were both in jail, her old man was drunk all the time, and her father-in-law was always slapping her bottom. I had always taken her family for granted. They weren't so different from most of the families in our neighborhood. But now that I had seen Kathy's home, not rich, not much more than poor, but where everybody cared about each other and tried to act like decent people, the picture Angela was painting was making me sick. I could hardly stand for her to be hanging onto my arm. At Mark's request, I pulled into a parking lot across the street from a liquor store. Mark got out and disappeared. He was looking for somebody to buy the booze. You can't legally buy booze until you're 21 in this state, so we always have to get some old guy to buy it for us, usually somebody's big brother. If you can't come up with one of them, there was bound to be some rummy hanging around who was willing to buy it if you gave him a little extra to buy something for himself. I sat in the car and talked to Angela, who had completely given up to tears. It was the first time since I had known her that I had seen her cry. She was a tough little chick. Her eye makeup was running all over my shirt front, but that didn't bother me as much as the way it was running down her face in dark streaks. She almost looked like she was behind bars. Mark hopped back into the car with some rum, and we got a carton of pop at a one-stop store and took off for the lake. It was too cold to go swimming, but the lake is always a good place to go. There are a mess of them, lakes, that is, around here. I get so sick, Angela was saying. I feel like I can't take it anymore. Life is so lousy. I'm lousy. Everything is lousy. I can't stand it at home. I can't stand it at school. I can't stand it anywhere. I always thought, hell, I can get what I want. Get what I want and everybody can go to hell. But it doesn't work that way, Brian. I'm going to hell right along with them. I'm already there. Tomorrow she'd be tough again. Hard as rock Angela Shepherd. Tonight she was tired. And drunk. She passed out on my shoulder. We were stopped on a little dirt road, one of the millions that run along the lake and through the woods surrounding it. Mark sighed. I thought she was never going to shut up. I sure hate to see gutsy chicks break. Destroys my faith in human nature. You're never going to break, huh? Nope, Mark said. He pulled a pair of scissors out of his pocket. Pick these up at the one stop. He reached over and began cutting off Angela's beautiful long blue-black hair, close to her head. You ain't gonna cut it all off, I said, stunned. Yeah, I am. Setting up Curtis like she did, getting me cracked like that, she could have had me killed. That's right, I said, and suddenly all the hatred I had had for Angela, for her brother Curly, for everything she stood for, came back. I sat and watched Mark cut off all her hair. He tied it all up neatly when he had finished the job. It was a couple of feet long. Even with her hair gone and her makeup streaked all over her face, Angela was a beauty. She would always be. A lot of good it did her. We drove home about 3 that morning. Mark and me finished what was left of the rum. We dumped Angela and her hair in her front yard. She never even woke up. I didn't think she'd remember getting into the car with us, but her girlfriends would probably tell her that. She'd know who had cut off her hair. She wouldn't do anything about it, though, because one thing I knew about old Angel, she was proud. She'd say she had her hair cut at the beauty shop. She'd say, I was sick of all that hot mess. She'd never let on. I started crying on the way home from Angela's, and Mark had to drive. Sometimes rum affects me like that. I was still crying when we got home. We sat on the porch, and I cried while Mark patted me on the back and said, Hey, take it easy, man. Everything's going to be all right. I finally quit and sat sniffing and wiping my eyes on my shirt sleeve.
It was a quiet night. I was thinking.
Yeah?
Mark said in the same easy, concerned voice.
What were you thinking, Brian?
About that kid, Mike. The one in the hospital. We talked to him a couple of times, remember?
Yeah, I remember. He got beat up trying to do a black chick a favor.
How come things always happen like that? Seems like you let your defenses down for 1 second, and man, you get it. Pow! Care about somebody, give a damn for another person, and you get blasted. How come it's like that?
You got me, Brian. I never thought about it. I guess 'cause nothing bad has ever happened to me.
I looked at him.
Nothing bad had ever happened to him?
His parents had killed each other in a drunken fight when he was 9 years old, and he saw it all. He'd been arrested for auto theft. He had seen Charlie shot and killed. He had nearly been killed himself by some punk kid he had never seen before.
Nothing bad ever happened to him.
Then I knew what he meant. Those things hadn't left a mark on him, because he was Mark the Lion. Mark, different from other people. Beautiful Mark, who didn't give a damn about anyone, except me. I suddenly knew why everyone liked Mark, why everyone wanted to be his friend. Who hadn't dreamed of having a pet lion to stand between you and the world? Golden, dangerous Mark.
You are my best friend, Mark, I said, still a little drunk. Just like a brother to me.
I know, buddy, he said, patting me again. Take it easy, don't start bawling again.
I sure wish I knew where M&M was, I said, and tears were running down my face again in spite of myself. I like that dumb little kid. I wish I knew what happened to him.
He's okay. Take my word for it.
You know where he is, I said. He's been gone all these weeks, and you know where he is.
Yeah, I do.
If he wanted to come home, he'd come home. Don't worry. You've got to take me where he is, Mark, I said, knowing I sounded like a drunken nitwit. But I couldn't help it, seeing how I was so drunk.
Sure, Brian, don't cry. I'll take you there tomorrow. But don't count on him coming home.
Kathy is awful worried about him. You know, Mark, I think I'm going to marry Kathy.
Come on, man, Mark said, trying to pull me to my feet.
Yeah, marry Kathy and be sure to name all the kids after me. Let's go in the house. Try and be quiet, okay? You don't want the old lady to see you like this. I should have known better than to let you drink all that rum.
Didn't you drink any?
Nah, I was drinking plain Coke.
I drank all that rum by myself? I couldn't believe it. I'm not much of a boozer.
Except for what Angela drank.
Mark was helping me up the steps. I was weaving back and forth. If he hadn't been hanging on to me, I would have dropped flat on my face.
Poor Angel. We should have left her alone, Mark. That was a mean thing to do, cut off her hair like that.
Please, Brian, for Pete's sake, don't cry anymore. He half dragged me into our room and pushed me onto my bed. I passed out. I could hear Mark moving around the room, feel him taking my shoes off and pulling the blanket up over me, but it was all as if he was real far away, or I was weighed down inside myself.
What did I ever do to deserve you, Mark? Pull a thorn out of your paw?
Brian, buddy, you are as wiped out as I've ever seen you. I think you'd better shut up and go to sleep.
When did we start running around together, Mark, remember?
We've always been friends. I can't remember when we weren't.
How come your old man shot your mother? She shot him back, but it was too late because she was dying anyway.
I really was drunk, because I had never mentioned that to Mark in all the years I'd known him.
It was me. I was under the porch. I could hear them real plain. The old man was saying, I don't care, I ain't never seen a kid with eyes that color. Nobody on my side of the family has eyes that color, not on yours either. And the old lady says, that's right, why should he look like anybody in your family? He ain't yours. And then they start yelling, and I hear this sound like a couple of firecrackers. And I think, well, I can go live with Brian and his old lady. Did you really think that?
I opened my eyes and the room was turning around slowly. It was making me sick. Something was making me sick.
Yeah, I did. I didn't like living at home. I got sick of them yelling and fighting all the time.
I got whipped a lot, too.
I remember thinking, this'll save me the trouble of shooting them myself. I don't like anybody hurting me.
I'm glad you came to live with us.
Me too. Now you really better shut up, man.
Why are you trying to shut me up?
I said, making an effort to sit up. It made me even sicker, so I lay back down.
You got a cigarette?
Right in the old secret place.
Mark pulled back his mattress and got a pack of cigarettes. He always kept an extra pack there. When we were little and didn't want Mom to know we smoked, we kept our cigarettes hidden. It wasn't till much later that we found out she had known about it all along. I couldn't light my cigarette for some reason. Mark lit it for me and stuck it in my mouth. He sat back on his bed, watching me, his elbows on the windowsill. I could see the end of his cigarette glowing.
Charlie, he tried to help somebody out and look what happened to him, I said.
This was connected with what he'd said about Mike somehow, but Mark followed my train of thought, just like he always had.
Charlie wasn't about to let a couple of his friends get beat up by some hicks. What happened then, well, that was just the way things turn out sometimes.
Yeah, but listen, Mark, if somebody had said to him, is saving a couple of dumb kids from getting beaten up worth your life? He would have said, hell no. Charlie would have said that, Mark.
Sure he would have said that. But you don't know what's coming. Nobody does. He sure knew he was taking a chance. Brian, he must have known those guys had guns. He knew they were rough guys. He took a chance and he got a rotten break. That's it.
It doesn't make any sense. Like you getting busted with that bottle. A little harder and you would have been dead.
But I ain't. This is the way it is, Brian. Angela Shepherd is a tough little chick who set out to get a shy guy who didn't know she was alive. So she sweet-talked some dummy into fighting for her. And I happen to be friends with Curtis. Happen to be sitting on the car with him when the dummy picks the fight with him. And I happen to be a little high. So I step in between Curtis and the punk. Now, if Angela wasn't tough, if she was a nice girl from the West Side, maybe she would have left well enough alone and given up on Curtis. If Curtis was a playboy like you, he would have picked her up when she wanted to be picked up. If that kid wasn't so dumb, he would have never taken on Curtis, who was no slouch of a fighter, man, I can tell you. If I had had a date that night, I would have been somewhere else. But Brian, that ain't the way things went. You can't walk through your whole life saying if. You can't keep trying to figure out why things happen, man. That's what old people do. That's when you can't get away with things anymore. You gotta just take things as they come and quit trying to reason them out. Brian, you never used to wonder about things. Man, I've been getting worried about you. You start wondering why and you get old. Lately, I felt like you were leaving me, man. You used to have all the answers.
I can't help it, Mark. I can't help thinking about things. Like Mike and Charlie and Eminem and you. It's all mixed up and I can't help it.
You can help thinking about it.
He leaned over his bed, reached across the short space that separated us, and yanked the cigarette out of my fingers.
You're gonna go to sleep and burn us alive, he said.
I remember I was gonna say, no, I ain't. But I was asleep before I could get the words out. Chapter 8. I was real hungover the next morning. Besides that, I had to get up early and go to work. Mark woke me up. He was a human alarm clock and never needed more than 5 hours sleep a night. Me, if I don't get at least 9 hours, I feel dead. I felt dead that Saturday morning. I wished I was, anyway. I was feeling so bad that I actually stuck a loaf of bread in a grocery bag and dropped 3 cans of soup on top of it. Bread always goes on top. In a supermarket, this is like the 10 Commandments all rolled into one. It was a wonder I didn't lose my job that Saturday. I carried groceries for this one young housewife type, and when I put the bags in her car, she handed me her phone number. I was feeling so bad I groaned, "Lady, you gotta be kidding." Like I said, it was a wonder I didn't lose my job. It was 2 in the afternoon before the sound of the cash register quit blasting my ears, and it was quitting time before I finally felt I could eat something. This shows you how sick I was. I had a date with Kathy that night, but she had to work late. I would pick her up at the hospital snack shop at 10. This was fine with me, as I wanted a chance to go look for M&M. Mark knew where he was. When I got off work, I found Mark sitting in my car. "I figured you'd want to hunt for M&M," he said. "How's your head?" "Better. Man, don't ever let me guzzle like that again." Mark shrugged. "You wanted to. You had to get good and drunk because I was cutting Angela's hair off and you couldn't take it." I flipped a remark that I had said many times before, but not to him. Even from my side of the car, I felt him tighten, getting ready to spring. The gulf was between us again. For some reason, I was hacked off because he didn't need to sleep 9 hours, because he wasn't hungover. "You sound like Kathy," I said.
"Heaven forbid."
"What have you got against her, anyway?"
"What's she got against me?"
"You're a bad influence." I don't know why I said that, because Kathy sure as hell never said anything like it. Mark was quiet for a minute. Then he said something really rotten. I had it coming for what I'd said to him, but he didn't have to drag Kathy into it. I gripped the steering wheel. "You want to get out of this car and have it out?"
"You don't want to swing on me, do you?"
It was partly a statement and partly a request. I was quiet.
"I'm sorry," Mark said, and I kept driving.
This was as close as we ever came to having a fight. I followed the directions Mark gave me. We went into this old part of town, which used to be a really classy place maybe 30 or 40 years ago, with these huge old houses that were probably a big deal when they were built. They just looked gloomy now. Most of them were divided into flats. On Mark's say-so, I pulled into a driveway in front of one of them. There was a sign hanging from the porch ceiling that said, "Love," in red and green letters. "He's here?" I asked, because I wasn't sure what was going on.
"Last time I was here, he was."
Mark got out of the car. You can tell when somebody is familiar with a place. Mark had been here many times before.
"Come on."
I got out of the car, wondering what in the world Mark could have been doing here. Mark didn't knock. He just opened the front door and walked in. I followed him. The whole inside of the house was freaked out with posters. A girl with long, streaked blonde hair, wearing blue jeans and a paint-splattered shirt, was lying on a beat-up couch. She had the deadest, most colorless face I had ever seen.
"Hello, Cat," she said to Mark.
She knew him. She didn't call everybody Cat.
"Peace, baby,"
Mark said. I tried not to laugh. I dig hippies okay. I mean, they've got some great ideas, but sometimes it was funny.
"Freaked out?"
Mark said politely, as if he were saying, "How are you these days?"
"Way out, man.
She was staring at the ceiling so intently that I glanced up there, just to make sure the answer to the universe wasn't written across it. If it was, I couldn't see it. Maybe she could. Mark stepped over a stringless guitar and went upstairs. I stumbled after him, looking around. Somebody was in the kitchen, singing. Each of the steps was painted a different color. It was a good effect, but they were awful dirty. Mark stepped into a bedroom. There were about 6 or 7 kids in it. One kid was lying on a bed, watching his fingernails. The others were sitting cross-legged in a circle, talking about some book. I hadn't read it, so I didn't get the conversation, but these kids were not dumb. They were all in blue jeans and old shirts and fringed vests. A couple of them were smoking grass. "Hi, Cat," a guy with a beard and a flowered shirt said.
"I'm looking for Eminem," Mark said. "You seen him?"
"Baby Freak? He ain't been around today. The kid's flying, man. He's gonna crash." "You didn't let him take anything, did you?" I said. This may have been against house rules, as nobody had said anything to me yet, but this place was getting on my nerves.
"There isn't any letting here," this fat chick says. "We're free."
I looked her over with the practiced eye of a playboy and popped off with something really good. Then I raised 2 fingers and said, "Peace." This seemed to earn their forgiveness, because they all went back to their literary discussion. Now the kid on the bed was painting his fingernails with green watercolor. On the way out, we passed the blonde chick. She was reading a book and smoking grass.
"You seen Baby Freak?" Mark asked.
She shook her head.
"Sorry. See you around, Cat."
Even sitting up, she looked dead.
When we got back into the car, I said, "You dating her?" "Sometimes. Like the lady said, they're free."
I thought about that a long time.
I'm the first to admit I've got hang-ups. I don't think I'd ever consider myself really free.
But I'm not sure I'd consider them free either.
"Just because it ain't your bag, don't knock it," Mark said, after we had driven in silence for a while.
I didn't say anything.
"Grass, rum, both are a high."
"Yeah, well, listen, man, rum's gonna maybe get me a weekend in the drunk tank. Grass could get me 5 years in the pen."
"That law ain't necessarily right."
"It's the way things are."
I was puzzled. I'd never known Mark to smoke pot. I wondered why he was defending it. "I don't smoke it, so quit worrying," Mark said, reading my mind as usual. "I just don't like to see you judging people."
"What the hell is bugging you? I didn't say anything." Mark was quiet. Then he said,
"You remember when the Socs used to come through here looking for somebody to beat up?"
"Yeah."
"You remember when me and you beat up that hippie kid in the park?"
"Yeah," I said.
"I'm a tough punk, Brian, but I ain't dumb."
We drove the rest of the way home in silence. I picked Kathy up at the hospital. I didn't tell her about going to the hippie house to look for Eminem. I didn't see any sense in getting her all upset. After all, I hadn't found him. We drove up and down the ribbon, then stopped by the park on the way home. This was becoming standard procedure. I was getting more and more serious about Kathy, and this was really strange for me. I had always had a love 'em and leave 'em attitude. Even with Angela, I guess it was more a pride thing than a love thing. I still hadn't told Kathy I loved her, though. It was like my never thanking Charlie for letting me use his car. It was something I just couldn't do when it meant anything. "Hey, Kathy," I said while we were on the way home. "If I got a ring, would you wear it?"
"Yeah," she said.
That's how we started going steady.